Struggling with how to approach the challenging topic of estate planning with your family? In this episode, I have a conversation with estate planning expert Bruce Young. He's going to share invaluable insights on the importance of candid conversations and family harmony, creating what he calls purpose-driven estate plans.
This is the Executor Help Podcast, the show for people who want the sense of security knowing all their affairs are in order. Avoid the stress and anxiety of what could happen to your estate, to your assets, and to your family when you're no longer here. Now here's your host, David Eady.
With me today is Bruce Young. He's the founder of Collective Agreement. Among his many services as a certified executive advisor, Bruce helps families when they're fighting. So today we're going to be talking about the purpose-driven estate planning. Now, actually, it's going to focus towards what I like to usually talk about is that there's three types of families. There's a family that does nothing. There's a family who does something, but they keep it a secret and they let the paperwork do the talking. And those are the ones that always usually end up in court. But we're going to focus a little bit more on the families that who communicate and they prepare the next generation. So first off, Bruce, I want to thank you so much for taking the time to be here today.
David, great. Thank you so much. It's a pleasure and it's an honor. Okay. I'm a fan of your podcast. Gave it 5 stars and will continue to. And I'm really honored to be one of your guests because great guests.
Wow. Thanks. Well, thanks for pumping my tires. That's very nice of you. I should point out that I'm here in Montreal. You're there in Toronto. For the listening audience, there is a little bit of a rivalry between Montreal and Toronto. And to aggravate me because you can't see this, we're doing this on Zoom. Bruce thought it would be, I guess, as I told him, it's a feeble attempt at humor, is wearing a Toronto Maple Leafs jersey. It's a hockey thing between the two cities. We'll just move on from that. Actually, I won't move on from that. The Leafs haven't won since 1967. Okay, so let's get to our first question, Bruce.
But we got so close in 93. Come on. Okay, for your listeners either aren't hockey fans or aren't from this, the eastern part, some of your American listeners, perhaps, David, this is one of the deepest rivalries in sports. It goes way back, but, and you and I have jousted many times on it, but let's call it the reality as it is. Your Montreal Canadiens have won 24 Stanley Cups. The next closest team is the Leafs, and we're only at 13. Yeah. So okay. I said to you publicly, I will acknowledge the supremacy of the Canadiens over the Leafs.
Thank you. That's hard for a lot of Maple Leafs fans to mention that. And I'll also put in this last caveat. The last time the Leafs won, TV was still black and white. Okay, so let's get to my first question. We're going to talk about purpose-driven estate planning. So again, like I said, it's about, the family that's decided that they're going to communicate. They're going to help the next generation. So they're not going to leave a lot of chaos in the family because there's no plan. Have you got like a personal experience or have you witnessed, or you've seen a transformation from by doing some sort of purpose, having a purpose in estate planning that helped shape a legacy for a family?
Well, gosh, lots of stories. And just before I get into the stories, David, in listening to many of your podcast episodes, podcast is called Executor Help. It's based on a book that you published. Great book, by the way, everybody. It's interesting because in your podcast, you go so beyond, as I'm going to do here today, the parameters of just dealing with, an executor and trying to help them through the process. Anybody who's been an executor knows how complex and how difficult it is navigating the process, let alone navigating the dynamic. You've taken that and in your episodes and often gone into some very deep emotional issues. And let's face it, it's, for anybody going through dealing with planning for death and then through death, it's emotional. Yet too many people and too many advisors in our space, it's transactional. It's almost these days, it's become everything sort of becoming templated. And it's that emotional connection that is sometimes forgotten about, often forgotten about. And you talk about it in through your episodes. That's what I talk about. And I frame it around the family journey. And it's interesting because when you change that framing from the individual who you're dealing with to rather the family journey, it's a another way I look at it is, you know, you go from me to we. Interesting, if you look up lots of, if you look at literature and websites of companies and people who offer services in the estate planning, it's often, they often frame it around, we'll do this for you with your assets and your wishes. That's going to bring me to a personal story there. And it's a, you know, it, everybody sort of focuses on the person writing the will, the testator. But in fact, if you step back a bit and go, why are we doing this? What's our purpose here? What's the purpose for us as advisors and for the individual that we're trying to help? And, you know, I know you're a deep family roots. We're here on a podcast, and any of the meetings that you and I've had, there's a picture of your parents beside you. I've got mine on my wall beside me. In my case, I've got some very close siblings. Yeah, I'll tell you a story. When my parents had passed, and my mother was, when she passed away, she was the second to go. I have two older brothers. You know, we were all together. Now, my parents came from obviously a different generation, and they came from a generation when their friends and their advisors, when they wrote wills, they were very specific, right down to the nth degree of detail. I want this piece to go to this son. I want this piece to go to that person. I mean, my mother, bless her heart, had and wonderful mother that we were all very close with, had absolutely everything scripted. When she passed, after the funeral, we finally all got together as a family in our parents' now vacant, empty home. And my brothers and my sisters-in-law, we sort of sat around and said, okay, we've got to sort of figure things out. And I said, well, here's the will, but let's not look at it yet. And we each of us took a clipboard. We walked around the home and we wrote down on our piece of paper what we want. And what we had agreed to was, when you came back, if nobody else had the item on your list, you took it. And if somebody else did, well, then we'll sort it out. And we divvied everything up very easily, very peacefully, very, very wonderfully. We went back to the will and we started looking and went, well, wait a minute, mom wanted you to have that painting, or mom wanted you to have, you know, that piece of jewelry of hers. And we said, you know what, that's okay. This is what works for us. And it's interesting. I often tell that story because it's the harmony in our family. And I'm very blessed to have two brothers and sisters-in-law that we're all very close. And we're like any other family. We've had our differences and things that certainly could have pulled us apart. And there were a couple things that were very important. There was one piece that my mother wanted me to have and I picked it. But one of my brothers really wanted it. And he says, you know what, Bruce, here, you know, maybe I could just, we really have a spot for that in our home. And I said to my brother, Rick, you know what? You take it, you know, make sure in your will, you're just passing it back to me at that time. But sure, you have it. And in the same generosity, you can probably see over my shoulder, there's these three prints that are on the wall, the pieces of art. And my mother had wanted each one of us to take one. And my brother said, you know what, Bruce, they've always been together. You keep them together. Long story to get at. Family harmony is achieved when, one, you recognize the nature of your family, and you don't look at your planning as just as a sort of one point in time. And a second comment here is you also have to recognize generational differences. And so what my parents' wishes were set based on their generation. It was a little different than ours. And that leads me to, we've got to recognize that the new generations coming in, the millennials in particular, have very different attitudes than some of us who still walk around wearing a Leafs jersey and remember the glory days of the Leafs. That, you know, you have to factor those things in. And so when you take estate planning out of being transactional and formulaic and based on templates, all of a sudden we as advisors can reframe it for our client in a way that I think, if we're successful, helps unify families. And to me, I think that's, if we do that, then we've really done a good job.
In terms of the communication, you know, your mom, at least she scripted out, and you and your brothers, you got along. But did you always get along? I know every family's got a little bit of messiness. Did the death of your mom bring you closer together? Did it make you, you know, were there differences before before she had passed away. And because of, you know, what you're all going through, you decided, let's work together. Because, you know, you're the sort of the picture perfect of, you know, how families stay together, where families come to you who are past that. You don't, they don't have the same sort of relationships, and they view their siblings in a different way when they come and see you, when you're helping them with their disputes. So is, I guess I'm asking about communication. How important is that as a tool, keeping and maintaining family harmony so that there aren't any fights? Because right now we've got families in court damaging their relationships forever, fighting over cottages, you know, money, homes, businesses. How important is communication? And when as you as an advisor, when they come and see you, can that communication be repaired? Can that family harmony be, you know, brought back?
It can be. I'm not a therapist. And by the way, I've had clients where I've said, as part of your estate planning process, go engage a family therapist. You just hit on something, and you've talked about it in a number of your episodes, and I think it is really, really critical, and that is communication. And it's the void, it's the absence of communication where a lot of that conflict happens. We see it over and over again, and especially once you get into dealing with estate administration, which is what I work on, or in the space that I'm in. You know, a lot of what I talk about here, David, is just lessons learned. I've shared with you, these are lessons learned from being in the trenches and just watching how things break down. Yeah, you asked about my family, you know, briefly about that. We're three boys growing up. We had our fair share of fights and disagreements. We had periods of time where we didn't speak a lot. One of my brothers lives in the U.S. You know, there's times when we're closer, times when we're not. But you asked an interesting question. I actually think that when my parents passed, it did bring us together, and we are now very close, and we were able to find that connection in part because one of the things our parents taught us was around communication. We were a family that talked a lot. You know, let me tell you, I'm going to tell you a story of a client. Let's call him Fred. Fred's been successful in his life, and he's now reaching retirement. He's got four kids and a wonderful life and a cottage. In fact, it was a cottage that his father passed down to him. His father was Fred's is a common story here for many in Canada. He was an immigrant. He worked hard. He eventually got to a point where he could buy a piece of land. He always wanted a cottage. He and his son, Fred, built this cottage. And you know, Fred, you know, that cottage has been everything to him. Fred has four kids. His family is spread around. But growing up, they all spent lots of time at the cottage. And Fred is making all these plans for the cottage. He's got a trust that he's ready to set up for it. He's going to fund it with an insurance policy because he wants that family cottage to stay on. And he wants his kids to carry on. And I can't tell you how common that is. But there's one problem here. He has to sat down and talk to his kids about it and said, hey, kids, what do you want? And I see this often where families have sort of patriarch or matriarch in the family says, I want that family cottage to carry on. And that can be a wonderful idea as long as your kids want that. Fred's four kids, they're spread all over the place. They themselves have got their own families. One has done extremely well, has already bought a cottage for him and his family. It may not be as important to him. I sent Fred back to say, bring your kids together, see if they want the cottage before you go through this very expensive exercise to set up a cottage and insurance policies to fund it so that they can carry on in perpetuity for your next generation. If they may not want it. Yeah, that's communication that's needed.
Getting back to you, with your brothers, and there's the next generation after you guys, are you having the conversations with the nieces and the nephews, your own kids, in terms of estate planning and having that communication?
It took being in this space and seeing some of the issues that go on to really appreciate the importance of it. And in my case, on a personal note, David, I'm part of 50% of the population. I come from a split family. My first wife and I are no longer together. Children from my first marriage, my spouse that I live with now, she has children from her first marriage. And we have a wonderful blended family. We have, our adult children spend time together. They're good friends with each other. We love it. It's a family life that we want. I'm having conversation with all of my children, including my stepchildren, because that's part of the reality. And I live, we own our home together, put it into place, proper agreements. It's not enough just to have the paperwork. I brought the families together, everybody with spouses, to have a conversation. Of course, you start talking about this is what happens the event one of us dies, and the normal reaction right away from somebody at the dining room table, which is where you should, oh, we don't want to talk about it. We've got to have this conversation. And I'd rather have the conversation, even though it may make you feel a little uncomfortable. And we've done it with everybody together.
How many times have you, first thing, when's the best time to do it? And how do you bring it up?
It's a great question. I don't think there is a best time. I think it's just do it. I'm a big fan of this book called Radical Candor, and I apply that right across. There are times you just have to be candid. I think my children, my stepchildren have come to realize that's me. And maybe they're just used to it, no matter what it is that we're talking about. But I didn't equally, when we did have the conversation, I didn't ambush them. I didn't surprise them. I said, everybody, you're coming together. We normally have family dinners. We're going to have dinner here. And we're going to sit down. And I want to have a conversation around our estate planning, around what the future looks like. I need everybody to understand the arrangements that your mom and me have put in place, and this is what we want. And I also need you to understand it's what we put in place now, and we'll continue to change it to adjust to changing circumstances. And I'll tell you another one that I added to it. Also, learning from the trenches. I also had as part of that conversation, who is best suited to be the executors. And what's going to be involved in that, and how the rest can help support the executors. We have one child who moved to the States, is living in the States at the moment, may or may not return to Canada at some point in time. There are special challenges when you have an executive, particularly in Canada, but it's true of any country. There are special challenges when one of your executors is non-resident. You can work around them, but it just makes it more difficult. And so we had the conversation of, how do we set up a system here for everybody to feel comfortable and trust the people, the ones that we're choosing to be executors, and also make sure that we set up in a way we set you up for success. I write quite a bit about this in the articles that I write in my newsletter, about the importance of understanding, about setting not only what you want in your wishes, but also in understanding the estate administration process. It's complicated, it's comprehensive. Just about in any jurisdiction, no matter what province or state you're in, it's really difficult. I'm based in Ontario. You've got to go through the courts between the court forms, the tax laws. No wonder everybody has to run to a lawyer and then trust and professional executors to do this, because it's really complex, let alone the executors having to balance the emotions involved. So the EQ, the emotional intelligence you have to be able to understand. Not everybody's suited to be an executor. You've talked about that in some of your episodes. Understanding who to be your executor is an important part of the conversation, and an important part of the planning.
So I got so many questions. So we've got the family together, you explaining the, what your estate plan is. Was it at that point you said, this is who's going to be the executor? Like one of the children, I guess you chosen. Did you have to explain why you chose them as an executor? And how did that play in the room?
Before bringing it to the room, I had had the conversation with the chosen, with people I chose as our executors. And it's something I always recommend to my clients. Sit down, have that conversation with who you want to be your executors.
And what do you say to, when you're choosing the executor?
I tell them what's involved. I tell them that it's going to take an enormous amount of their time. I tell them it's going to require skills that they don't have. So they're going to have to know who to reach out to. It's, you know, I have one son who's an engineer and a scientist. You know, I have a stepson-in-law who's in philosophy. They don't understand tax law. I studied tax law. I said, you're going to have some challenges, but it's okay. You don't have to go it alone. But what I've said to my children, and I said to first when I spoke to those I want to be executors, and I've said to all of our children when we got together, is you're the people who know us and understand us. You'll know what our intentions are. We can write all we want on a piece of paper, but you have to understand the intent behind it. I don't want this turned over, if you can avoid it, to a professional executive service. And for all your listeners who happen to be, you know, work for professional executives, I'm sorry to say, I advocate for you try to keep it to within people you know and trust, because they get you. I've said to my children, go get the help. And I've written into my will and into our wills, we've written, you know, the estate will pay for the services you need. And I want you to get a CEA, a certified executive advisor as well, because that's your co-pilot that's going to guide you through it all. Because you can't possibly know all the stuff. If you know from experience, you go through an estate administrating the entire process. It's going to take usually over a year. You've got all sorts of challenging issues to deal with.
If you're lucky. On average, it's usually 18 to 24 months. My case, it was 7 years. So,
and if there's no disputes, and I know in your case there was, and then you've got to navigate that. And there are some families where you cannot avoid disputes. I'm going to come back to that in just one second. That some of that can be avoided in planning. But you need an executive who understands project management. They don't have to be a project management expert. They can get a CEA or somebody like that to guide them. But this is when you apply the principles of project management, which businesses know how to do really well, that's how you can better guide the process. So we know who in our family is better and who isn't. We've made sure they were comfortable with the role. When we had the whole family together, you know, when I sort of presented who and why we want those people to be executors, across the table, all I got was nodding heads going, yep, it's best for him and her to be doing that. And by the way, I'm a big believer in not just having one executor. So we have multiple executors.
So you have multiple executors. I'm not a big fan of that, but I'd like to hear your reasoning why you chose multiple executors. And my second question is, because you've got a blended family, are your executors from your first wife, or is it involve also your stepchildren as two stepchildren as well are executors?
The latter. In my case, we have both involved in both mine and my spouse's estate planning as executors, and we built in that they for them to have the support of professional help all along the way. It works for us. It's not going to work for it. Doesn't work for everybody.
Absolutely. Okay.
And so there is one of the things I believe, and I talk about the family journey, is understanding the family. There is no one size fits all solution. There isn't around a will. There isn't around, you know, certain particular processes whether you should have one or multiple executors. That depends on the individuals. You have to build it in a way that aligns to what that particular family is best suited for, if will fit for them the best. By the way, I happen to like multiple executors, as long as you build into the will how those executors can operate. I'm not a believer in joint executors, because you can't make it with a joint. If it's written too simply in the will, you can't make a decision without both signing off on it. No, you empower a certain amount, but maybe you set thresholds, only major decisions. And And you create that cooperation, that collaboration, but you don't make necessarily one dependent on the other. Certainly not for the every for the standard, regular, somewhat easy to manage mundane details. But the big ones, yeah, I want them to consult together. I want them to be able to deal with that.
Chosen the executors, you had the family discussion, and you're preparing the next generation. So that situations change, the will could change. So it's an evolution. It's going to evolve the conversations. I don't assume that you're just going to have one conversation and then that's it. We're never going to have this talk about it again. Do you see yourself having other conversations from time to time? Estate and legacy planning, along with dealing with families, is a big subject. It's more than just finances. Harmonizing family values is the key. In part two of my conversation with Bruce Young, we continue to give you tips to get organized to leave a legacy of love and order. I hope you enjoyed the episode. Can you do me a favor? Show some love for the podcast by leaving me a rating and review on Apple Podcasts. Can you share it? And subscribe to or follow on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts. I'm David Eady. Thanks for listening.